Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Jeff Calkins is columnist of the Daily Memphian, also hosts the Jeff Calkins Show every single day right here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Well, every single weekday, I should say, from 9 to 11. He's on X, Jeff_Calkins. Jeff, how was your weekend?
I'm good. You? It was good. I'm good. I'm glad to be back. Everything's splendid.
Okay, good to hear. Did week one of the college football season with three top 10 matchups and an upset there from Florida State and Mike getting back off the schneid after a 2-10 season, did it all live up to the standards you had set in your head?
It was the best. Exceeded any expectations I had. It was just – I think – I mean, honestly, I think the Florida State-Alabama result is what separated it.
Yeah.
In terms of just holy smokes, what a weekend. But, you know, I thought the LSU-Clemson game was just a tremendous game, you know, even though it wasn't particularly high scoring. And they're across the board. It was just a lot of fun.
Yeah, I thought the Miami-Notre Dame game was one
great.
Of the best of the weekend.
Another really good one. And although we overreact, you know, it's fun to – it's like it's kind of startling. There's an LSU team that has struggled, you know, wasted Jaden Daniels because they couldn't stop anybody, and now that defense looks hellacious. Miami, same thing. Miami – you know, was just atrocious defensively last year. And now you're looking like, okay, they had a bust or two, like, but I thought they were, looked like a very different team.
Right.
You know, Ohio State, obviously with eight new defensive starters and a new defensive coordinator, just totally confusing arch. There's just a lot of, if you're in the overreaction business, there's a lot to overreact to. And then there was also a lot to sort of, if you wanted to mock people, you know, if you were a hater.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
we saw that last night. How about North Carolina?
A lot of opportunities there with Belichick, or you want to hate on Arch, or you want to hate on Alabama football generally, or like this. But if you're like, ha ha ha, once upon a time we were laughing at someone who's got the last laugh. Castellanos was certainly there.
Sure.
People were laughing at him. People were laughing at Gus Malzahn. People were maybe wondering about the Matt Patricia hire. And so. Like, I just thought it was a total feast of interesting things that happened over the weekend.
Yeah, so you said mocking people. There's things to mock. And the
yeah.
arch I want to talk about doesn't have to do with the guy that plays for Texas. How about the balloon arch after the game in the post-game press conference for Bill Belichick?
Yeah.
I wonder who decided to do that. We have to narrow down our suspects here. Can I ask you this? Have you ever seen that ever? A balloon
no.
arch after a 48-14 ass whooping in a press conference, in a press room. It sounds
never,
small to some
I'm,
people,
I mean,
but it is
I've
big
never
to
seen
me.
A balloon arch in any press room, winning, losing, anything. I've never balloon arches haven't been a part of press rooms in any press room I've ever been to.
Yeah, well, honestly, it looked like prom, but she's not that far removed from it, so I kind of understand it from her perspective.
It looked like
and
prom.
I think my favorite tweet, mocking tweet, was, you know, Jordan Hudson and Bill Belichick don't think 48-14 is that big of a deficit. You know, they don't think that's, yeah.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah, I liked
yeah,
that one.
Not that big of a difference. Yeah, and then honestly, of course, there were a lot of, you know, a lot of tweets that look stupid immediately because after they get go down the field and and go up 7-0. People are proclaiming Bill Belichick the best coach in the history of the world.
Skip Bayless and Colin Cowherd.
And then there's a 41-0. Oh, man. It was something else. It was just like, I mean, it was great. I wish we had four straight days of college football every weekend.
Absolutely. You know? Well, we got NFL coming back this week, so we'll have even more to talk about. All right, now to the actual Arch we need to talk about. Arch Manning, 170, one touchdown, one interception. He had some flashes. I thought that his misfires actually outweighed his flashes, though, unfortunately. The throw on third down that he missed on an easy drag route to Ryan Wingo early in the game, I think it was the second throw of the game, there was some flood concept off play action. He was rolling right, and it was a gopher. I mean, he just threw it directly into the ground. Missed his guy by about 10 yards short. Like, what did you think of Arch Manning ultimately? Because we did see him bounce back a little bit. The second half, especially the fourth quarter, looked a little better.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he looked totally rattled. For a guy who has been sitting on the sidelines and waiting for his moment, and maybe, you know, maybe to some extent it's to be expected. It's a tough place to start at Ohio State. But he looked rattled. He was terrible. Let's be honest. For 3.5 quarters, he was bad.
Yes.
And I think if you're a Texas fan, you just say, oh, okay, but it was after that that he settled down. We saw him make some throws, obviously the touchdown. And so that's the Arch that we will ultimately get. Because you hope it's not the 3.5 quarters that preceded that, where he looked very much like the Arch that we saw against Georgia briefly last year, which was once again overwhelmed. So if I'm Texas, I don't think I'm panicking. You know, I think you hold on to what you saw at the end from Arch. You also wonder a little bit whether, you know, he's not better in some sort of a little bit more of a speed, hurry up offense, which is, you know,
yeah.
I don't know. He
looked a lot better when they sped up.
He looked more comfortable. And so, obviously the defense is really good and we'll hold them into it. I mean, they did in the end outgain Ohio State, whether it's total yards per play, whatever else. It's not like Julian Sain was so great, but he didn't commit the big mistake like Arch did, and he looked better. Arch just looked totally uncomfortable. I thought he looked good in the Warby Parker ad. I like that. I like the Warby Parker ad. But when people are cracking about how you have more commercials than completions, you know, that's not good.
Yep, for sure. All right, now to Alabama, Florida State. Shout out to Mike Norvell and Gus Malzahn. I doubted them going into the week. Didn't think this was possible, but here we are, 31-17. But on the Alabama side, first week one loss in 24 years. It's the first time they have been below 20 in the AP poll since 2008. Kalen DeBoer in 14 games has 4 unranked losses. It took Nick Saban 235 games to have 4 unranked losses. Listen, like I knew that there was going to be some level of step down or step back when Kalen DeBoer took over for Nick Saban. It's just natural. Nick Saban is the best coach at any level I have quite frankly seen from a just consistent success standpoint. Consistency standpoint, I just don't think he'll ever be beat. Somebody may do it at some point. It's hard to envision, though. But did you expect it to be this precipitous,
no,
this fast?
No, I don't know how. I mean, first of all, I think did anyone besides Lee Corso call this?
How awesome. Lee was 6-for-6 in this
race.
That's
great.
This
seemed inconceivable. I mean, you could have imagined Florida State bouncing back and looking better and, you know, Mike having a 7 or 8 win season this year and not having the disaster of a 2-win season that he had last year. But he obviously made 2 great coordinator hires, it appears. People laughed at Malzahn a little, but they certainly laughed at Tommy Castellanos with the things that he was saying. And then they beat up Alabama.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't, a couple lucky passes, whatever else. It was, they dominated them. And when it came down to that 4th and 1 in their own, you know, in their own territory, up 7, Mike decides to go for it. and they just run it down their throat. It was remarkable. And so now you just have one bad loss after another. You've got a head coach who has lost to Vanderbilt, a head coach who's lost to a hideous Oklahoma team, a head coach that's lost to a Michigan team whose players had all opted out at that point.
And didn't have a quarterback to start with.
And didn't have a quarterback to start with. We had no quarterback to start with. And this game, all of which they were 14 or better point favorites. And they – so I don't really – I don't think it's a talent deficit. I mean, I still think they're the more talented team than all of these teams that they've lined up against. And yet it is – he is just not getting them to play. And you know, what do you do if you're Alabama? Looking at a $60 million buyout and –
Right.
There's a lot more. It feels like there's significant number, you know, more L's on that schedule to come.
And it really sucks because I don't think Kalen DeBoer is a bad football coach. I think he's a really good football coach. He was 116-13 in college football before he took over at Alabama.
So
he took Washington to a national championship. He did all these great. He won a Mountain West Conference championship with Fresno State. Like he's looked good. Something that I can't get out of my mind, and I know some people tried to do it's as bad a fit as Brian Harsin at Auburn, but I think that's completely
really?
Different because Brian Harsin was not even good at Boise State. He just took over a good situation and didn't completely kill it, right? Like, and then he got hired at Auburn. I never thought that was a good hire. I thought Kalen DeBoer was a fine hire considering who he had to replace. But I just come back to this. I think more so than anything, is fit just a problem? Right, because you're taking over for a defensive-minded head coach who was very much a disciplinarian, very much a guy who you know, would just get into his players you-know-what if they made mistakes. It just doesn't feel like there's that type of culture anymore at Alabama under Kalen DeBoer.
The shift was too jarring.
I think the shift was so fast. You need it, and I see some people saying – you should have hired somebody in the Saban coaching tree. Now, while I think that that's a okay thought, I don't know who from the Saban coaching tree was left to take that job at that moment. You know, you had Mario Cristobal elsewhere, you had Kirby elsewhere, you had Dan Lanning elsewhere, you had all these guys that could have been the answer elsewhere, happy in the shoes that they had. So I get that thought process, but it just feels like the switch in thinking and philosophy from a culture standpoint was too drastic. And that's where the fit comes in and why I think it was just way too much too fast.
Yeah, Feinbaum said last week in a comment that I thought was interesting. He said his culture makes me queasy. And I didn't quite understand what that meant, but now watching it, I do. By the way, totally unrelated to that, when you stop and think that the whole angst about the playoff system from last year was really the reason that we had to go through all this. Oh, the SEC's getting screwed. The Big Ten's getting screwed. But what that was really based on was Alabama being left out.
Yes.
Right. That's what it was really being based on.
Right.
And this was a reminder over the weekend that no one should have cried that Kalen DeBoer's Alabama team was left out. This is what they were last year, and it's what they are this year. And it is not some freaking travesty that needs a correction.
Right.
That team is left out of a playoff, right? I mean, and literally that is what our outrage – oh, it's outrageous. Oh, Alabama was left out. No, a very mediocre, flawed Alabama team that lost to Vandy and a bad Oklahoma team was left out, and we saw that team again over the weekend.
Yeah, they've lost three of their last four under Kalen DeBoer.
And we're gonna weep. We're gonna weep and gnash our teeth and change the playoff system over that. Come on.
You know, usually with a week one loss, especially with a team that was ranked in the preseason AP top 10, you say, okay, they can still salvage a good season. Because with Texas, still fully believe they're capable of winning a national title. With Clemson, believe the same thing. With Notre Dame, still think they're a top 10 team in the country. Like I you know, and obviously they played better competition. They played other top 10 teams. But with Alabama, is there any thought in your mind that, oh, this team's going to salvage this season? They look like they could sort of figure something out as the season goes along. Kalen DeBoer's got it. Like, does that thought even cross your mind after having watched them week one against Florida State?
It seems highly unlikely. Does it seem more unlikely than I thought for Notre Dame last year, though? You know, one of the things, for example, I think Clemson will make it because of competition. You know what I mean? Like the other reason that I'm less inclined to think Alabama can fix this is because, and you know, in fairness to the SEC, the schedule is not forgiving, right? And so you don't have the luxury that Clemson has of, well, all right, we lost this one, but in the end, even though the ACC may be stouter than we thought, in the end, it's still the ACC, so we'll be able to recover.
Yeah, to your point, their SEC opener's at Georgia, so.
Right, so it's just less forgiving for Alabama, and so therefore, yes, it seems unlikely that they will. It seems unlikely that they will recover and be in the playoff. But you know, now I could look as stupid as the people who were tweeting last night about Belichick.
And I heard
I'm not going to make any proclamation.
I've heard Michael Wilbon say this on PTI today, and I agree with it. I wish that as a college football watching society, we didn't have to speak in absolutes and exaggerations all the time. Because I think a lot of those exaggerations came back, and now we have all these storylines heading into the rest of the regular season. Well, is Arch Manning mid? Is Alabama completely falling off? Right. You know, like there's just these exaggerations that we spent all the off season on that completely. I mean, they went the other way in week one. They're completely gone.
I wish just the opposite. I wish if right now. You're out here and saying that that Alabama stinks and that whatever they do, like right, that's what happened, right? Like they did. But if they go off, then we can reevaluate. I actually, what I don't like is the cold takes exposed culture. When you say something and you're reacting to what you just saw, it's understood you're reacting to what you just saw and commenting on that performance. You're not actually saying forever that these teams are not capable of getting better or changing or morphing or whatever else. What I don't like is the cold takes exposed culture.
So you're a facts change, people change. That's the way of the world.
People change, and you should. Like, in fact, even those. I mean, I do think proclaiming Bill Belichick the greatest coach ever, college coach ever, after one drive. But that was a hell of a drive.
Yeah, it was.
It was a hell of a drive. If you reacted and were impressed by that drive and attributed it to good coaching, I don't blame you. I thought it was too. But, now, the truth of the matter is I think we learned his roster stinks, right? So the fact is, and he put together that roster too. Like, I'm not letting him off the hook for that. But so therefore, it actually was some pretty impressive coaching to be able to score on that first drive with that lousy roster. And but so I don't really blame you for saying that was an impressive drive. It was an impressive drive. That's the culture that I object to. Let people react in an instant without laughing at them later because they reacted in an instant. That's
right.
What people do.
Although the example you brought up, we should laugh at them for that. Because also, something we have learned through college football, especially in sort of the spread era and the highly explosive offenses, is opening scripts tend to make teams look a lot better than they are.
Right.
Especially first game of the year. What was it? Florida State last year, before they went 2-10, went right down the field on Georgia Tech and scored week zero.
Yes, opening script. Yes, right.
Yeah, opening script. I think people need to get used to that.
They've been able to work on that for a little bit, right? Yep. Yep.
Now, I haven't talked a bunch about the Tigers. What did you think of the first performance, first look at Brendan Lewis, that offense, that team in general? 45-10 over chat. I mean, not much.
It's sort of what we expected in the sense that you know, they could run the ball. You know, they got a bunch of running backs who can run the ball, and their quarterback can run the ball. He obviously has the one bad throw that he shouldn't have thrown. But beyond that, I thought it was workmanlike and pretty much what you would have expected. And then scoring another defensive touchdown, that's cool. But whatever. Like that game, Ole Miss's game, Arkansas's game, Vandy's game. Mississippi State, like whatever, they all beat overmatched foes, and we will, you know, try not to. There, you really can't draw much from it. I think the real question with Memphis is you look across the way, and you see what Tulane did to Northwestern, and you see what South Florida did to Boise, and you're like, huh? I wonder if there's two, you know, two really good teams in this conference that we're going to have to beat if we're going to, you know, be the, if we're going to emerge as the title holder.
Well, but they get them both at home.
And they get them both at home.
Right. Both
they
at home.
They get them both at home.
Okay. Yep. So we'll see. We'll see. But Jeff, appreciate it, man. Thanks.
Sure thing. Bye.
He's Jeff Calkins at Jeff_Calkins on X, daily Memphian columnist, also host of the Jeff Calkins Show every single weekday right here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Now, we need to shift gears, at least for the time being, and get into the National Football League. We have a trip around the NFL coming up on the other side. Stick around for that, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
How about it? Week one of the NFL season is upon us, and coming up on Thursday night, we're going to have the Eagles and the Cowboys facing off, so let's go ahead and get to a trip around the National Football League. Okay, they're going to be playing on Thursday. Some injury updates real quick. I have a lot to get to with Cowboys today, a lot to get to. For obvious reasons, Micah Parsons gone, David Mulugeta, his agent, spoke to First Take today, and Stephen A. Smith, but as Thursday comes, Tyler Guyton, their left tackle, is on track to play, and Trayvon Diggs, their corner, is on pace to play. So they're going to be mostly healthy going into Thursday night. That's kind of the least of everybody's worries, though, right now when it comes to the Dallas Cowboys. David Mulugeta, who is the agent of one, Micah Parsons, who was just traded to the Packers, and he got a 4-year, $188 million deal. I'm sure David feels pretty good about that. He spoke to First Take today and sort of rehashed some of the talking points, tried to get his side of the story out about negotiations back and forth with Jerry Jones as it pertained to Micah Parsons. That meeting where Jerry Jones thought that they ironed out a deal, David Mulugeta reiterated, there was no deal that was ironed out there. They always had to go through the proper channels to potentially get a deal done with Micah Parsons, and the proper channel was David Mulugeta. So I think that was sort of the biggest thing we quote-unquote learned today. But I thought it was a smart PR ploy to a certain extent, even though Jerry Jones doesn't have a whole lot of fans in Dallas or in the NFL right now when it comes to what he just did with Micah Parsons. But I thought it was a smart PR play for David Mulugeta to get up there and sort of hash out what has happened, what has transpired. Doesn't do a lot of media, but he decided to do it today. But what I also learned that is super interesting about Mulugeta and his relationship with Jerry Jones that people will view as fractured. You know who else he represents? George Pickens, who the Cowboys just traded for. And George Pickens, for those that are not, you know, in tune with his situation, he's going to want a new deal. He's going to want more money here probably by next year. He's going to want an extension. So if Jerry wants to get said extension done, he's going to have to talk with David Mulugeta, the agent that couldn't get it done on Micah Parsons, but is George Pickens' agent. How's that going to work out? David Mulugeta says that it's a completely separate situation, no hard feelings, that if they need to iron something out and get something done, something will get done. But something tells me, Connor, that can't be the full story. This was not something that I think David wanted to happen or Micah Parsons wanted to happen. They didn't want this relationship to be fractured. And for Mulugeta to act like that's not in the back of his mind or the front of his mind when negotiating on George Pickens' behalf, I think that's disingenuous. I truly do. But this is what we've been reiterating this entire time, Connor. Jerry Jones needed to know the bed that he was going to be laying in burning this bridge with Micah and David Mulugeta, because David has the most contract valuation signed in the entire NFL among agents right now. He's the best in the game. You can't burn bridges. You can't screw around with extension talks, or those could haunt you. So I'm curious how it's going to figure it out. David says there's no hard feelings, but something tells me in my brain that there is going to be hard feelings there. Micah Parsons, of course, was traded to the Packers, 4 years, $108 million, $136 million guaranteed. But we did learn the back injury that he has may be a little bit more serious than he was leading us to believe. He has an L4, L5 facet joint sprain in his spine and his back. Now, I have gone through and tried to look at what doctors are saying about this. And most doctors say it's more annoying than scary. It's something that could really be a pain tolerance issue and a pain management issue for the rest of his career. The Packers plan to do everything and anything they can to get him on the field from week one throughout the rest of the season, which, from what I understand, is an epidural shot or a shot, but that brings temporary relief. What they would need to then do to get him completely relieved of pain is get him on a rehab plan to continuously strengthen that back, the L4, L5 joint, and get that sprain all figured out. But this is something that could carry throughout the rest of his career. Now, I'm not saying this was a reason Jerry Jones shouldn't have gotten a deal done with a 26-year-old who has 52.5 sacks through 4 years and been on the All-Pro team 3 out of 4 years. That's not I don't think Jerry Jones knew more than anybody else. But this is an injury that does make me question what Micah Parsons is going to be able to do on a very short runway into the season with the Green Bay Packers, at least in 2025-26. Another back injury and elbow injury and 37-year-old, Matt Stafford has not been playing a whole lot in camp. The past week, he finally got involved, didn't really play in the preseason at all, so there has been questions about his availability coming up in week one, but we got the go-ahead today. He's on track to play week one. He's on track to play the year, so we'll see what Matt Stafford looks like. But I would tell you, if you're buying in on the Rams or if you have Matt Stafford as a fantasy quarterback, I would tread lightly. I would tread lightly because he's up there in age and he's dealt with multiple serious injuries the last couple of seasons. Another situation that unfolded through camp, Landon Dickerson, at one point during camp, it was sort of a week two of preseason, so thereabouts, he was taken off of the practice field on a cart, taken in, had a lower leg injury, but he is now on track to play on Thursday night against the Dallas Cowboys. So that is really good news for the Eagles, who are likely going to have their all-pro left guard suiting up. I keep banging this drum, but the 49ers have a lot of wide receiver issues, and what they did today kind of confuses me. 49ers are releasing wide receiver Russell Gage, who they added out of necessity because of their wide receiver room being down, with Brandon Ayuk not returning until at least week six, and you have Juwan Jennings, their leading receiver, who's going through a contract dispute, but they released him. They intend to sign him to the practice squad and elevate him for Sunday's game versus Seattle if he does not sign elsewhere, but obviously, when you're releasing a guy, you're taking a chance that he will sign elsewhere. So releasing him and then elevating him doesn't compute in my mind. When you're a wide receiver needy team, you need to make sure that wide receiver, without question, is on your team. And it feels like the 49ers are taking a chance before they play Seattle in week one. Final thing here, right tackle, Luke Goedeke, I believe is how you say it, but he's been around for a while. And he's played some really good ball. And he's played guard and center as well for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He re-upped on a big deal today for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They signed him to a 4-year, $90 million deal. So they lock up a right tackle that's been really good for them. But he's never really been in that sort of all-pro discussion. I think he's been to a Pro Bowl, but that's about it. And we know the Pro Bowl isn't the same as it once was, right? Getting to a Pro Bowl in 2025 is not the same as getting to a Pro Bowl in the early 2000s or before that. But Luke Goedeke, 4 years, $90 million, re-ups with the Bucs, and their O-line is set for the future. They already have Tristan Wirfs, who's young, at left tackle. They have a good interior. Good signing, but a lot of money. 4 years, $90 million for a guy that I don't think a lot of people know. But that will do it for a trip around the National Football League. When we come back, We have some beef going back and forth between the two Death Valley schools. We know which team came out on top, but who came out on top when it came to the pressers? We'll talk about that next. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, we know who won the Battle of Death Valley, right? We know who did it. It was LSU, pretty handily in the second half, 17-10. They won 14-0 in the second half, handled business, right? But I think there's another battle that's playing out right now in the public eye, and that's the battle of the two coaches, Dabo Swinney and Brian Kelly. Obviously, Dabo Swinney at Clemson and Brian Kelly of LSU. Let's go ahead and go to Dabo Swinney first, Connor. Dabo Swinney compared the LSU loss to a final exam on day one of the class. This is what he had to say. They made a 65%, a D, and we made a 58, an F. Okay, a lot to break down there. I don't think either team played that poorly. I thought it was a well-competed game. Also, to compare it to a final exam on the first day of class, I get it's the first game of the year, but you have spring and fall for preparation. You study. You do game planning that entire time. So for you to say it's the final exam on the day, in the first day of class, no, that's not how any of this works. You have preparation. You have the study. You have to go execute on a Saturday. A Saturday every single week is the final exam for your preparation. I found that absolutely bonkers by Dabo Swinney, but he's been known to make excuses in the past. This is the next one in line. And I don't like Brian Kelly all the time, but Brian Kelly heard about this and was asked about this in his presser today. Here's what he had to say.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Again, this is all like, you know, past. I agree with him wholeheartedly. I agree with Brian Kelly for once. They got dominated in the second half. And Dabo, you have to go look back at that. In the end of the day, I don't think your team played poorly. Sometimes the other team is just better than your guys. And they were that night. They were on Saturday night. And there's nothing to worry about. You're going to, by the end of the season, probably be in the college football playoff race. You're going to have a chance to battle for a national title. Just live with the loss. You don't have to make excuses and say we played poorly every time you lose a game. Sometimes the other guys are better. They get paid just like you get paid to compete on a Saturday, competed at a higher level. And here's the thing. Like, if I'm Brian Kelly and I watch back that film, I don't come close to grading it a 65. I graded at least a 92. It's an A. I thought LSU was great. They replaced four starting offensive linemen and handled the best defensive line in the country. I thought Garrett Nussmeier was phenomenal. I thought he would have graded out well. I want to see his PFF grade. You know, Blake Baker in year two, their DC, did everything in his power to stop the run. Allowed a 1.9 average yard per carry. Like, to take away from LSU in that way really rubbed me the wrong way hearing that from Dabo, and I'm glad Brian Kelly clapped back to a certain extent.
I think that his response was perfect because I just don't understand how you can give a team that beat you a 65. Like that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And I think that LSU was just the better team. They executed better in the second half. And I kind of am with you, though. I don't think Clemson played terribly in the game by any
second
means.
Second half, just, offensively, not great.
I think that LSU just was the better team that night.
Listen, like,
certainly had the better quarterback.
That what bothers me is every time you lose a game, it doesn't have to be directly on your team. It doesn't mean your team played poorly all the time. The other team practice, game plan, prep for this game, and they worked their ass off the same way you did. So to minimize how well they played because you lost a game, I find that it's just, it lacks a competitive nature. It's deflection. I think it's in bad taste. But we've known Dabo to be this way. I still think he has a good team, though. For him to completely, you know, crap all over his team that way, I don't think it's a good message in the locker room either. They worked their ass off. They just got beat by better guys. It happens. It happened to me in college. It's happened to everybody in college, except for those good Nick Saban teams. They didn't get beat very much.
They didn't get beat very much.
Or 2023 Michigan or some of those Georgia teams. Back-to-back Georgia teams. I mean, it's just sometimes you get beat. You don't have to say your team played poorly. You don't have to say the other team just played a little
bit
better.
It was weird to say his team played poorly and been like, they played poorly too, though. I need to make it very clear. It's like, are we sure about that?
I don't know.
Are we sure about that?
I don't think you can say that, Dabo.
Don't think so.
I don't. It was a well-competed game. Just let it be that. Against two teams that have a chance to win a national title this year. And that's okay. You can lose a game and you still have an opportunity to make up for it, Dabo. It wasn't a conference game. You still can accomplish all your goals. Don't have to take away from LSU because they beat you 17-10 opening weekend. It's okay. It's fine. But let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. Hour number three is on the way, and we'll open it as we normally do on a Tuesday with Christian Fowler. Make sure you stick around for that. 92.9 FM ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.